The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune, looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
All right. Welcome to a Friday, everybody. Yay, it's Friday. What's the good thing? It's also the day that Steve Bannon was found guilty. So, you know, here's the thing. Steve Bannon is a miserable, lying piece of human excrement. Or maybe that's being too kind because I'm not quite sure about the human part of it. But he thought he was above the law. Steve Bannon thought that because he's friends with the former guy, that that he's above a congressional subpoena. Well, guess what? Sorry, Charlie. So Steve Bannon, you know, he talked such a big game. He was going to get up there. He was going to, burn down the house, figuratively speaking. I'm not quoting him directly because the less I remember exactly what Steve Bannon says, the better. But he made all these big pronouncements. He was going to, you know, he was going to just take control and show them. And the only thing he said was, yes, sir, no, sir, and thank you, sir. He didn't testify on his own behalf. He didn't put forth any witnesses. He just claimed that he was, I guess, not guilty, which is, you know, pretty ridiculous. So, of course, after he was found guilty, he went out to the microphones in front of the courthouse, as apparently he's been doing every day. I've been paying as little attention as possible to this circus because, frankly, Steve Bannon makes my skin crawl. And again, the less I have to see him or anybody else from that former guy's former administration or his hangers-on, the better. Steve Bannon is a pimple on the boil of America's butt. It doesn't get more disgusting than that, does it? So, but let me share with you anyway, because I can, the video. Because after he was found guilty today, and we found out that the sentencing isn't until October? What? Why? Why not? Why isn't he thrown in jail immediately? That's what I want to know. But it's not. Sentencing will be in October for whatever reason. And so he got to walk out of that courtroom today without handcuffs. He didn't get taken directly to jail. I guess he did get to pass go. I don't know. But anyway, so he did. And he went to the microphones and he lied again. Too bad he wasn't on trial for perjury because, you know, he'd be found guilty of that too, I'm sure. Well, he didn't go under oath and lie on the stand because he didn't testify. I guess he didn't want to be charged with perjury. That's the only thing I can think of why he didn't testify in his own defense. Instead, he goes out in front of the courthouse to the microphones and he, you know, he lies there. And he does it because, well, I guess.
Steve Bannon.
Oh, hold on. I wasn't right. I'm not ready to play that yet. He did it because then he can lie all he wants and he won't get charged with perjury because he's not under oath. See how that works? Yeah, kind of underhanded and sneaky. And I was going to say clever, but he's not clever. He's diabolical. So let me share with you some of this. Steve Bannon, David, brother David in the chat room says, again, when they make the TV miniseries of all this, Steve Bannon must be played by Rosie O'Donnell. I like that. All right, so let's listen to the many ways he would have committed perjury had he taken the stand and said this crap under oath, which he wouldn't have done because he knows flat out that he's lying. All right, so this is the microphone set up on the courthouse steps, I guess.
To go through this, so their thanks. We respect their decision.
He's
we
thanking
may have
the
lost
jury.
The battle here today, but we're not going to lose.
Oh, shit.
Anymore,
hold on.
Okay?
No.
David Schoen's going to talk here in a second about exactly what the jury heard. They came to their conclusion, right? Well, about what was put on in that courtroom. David Schoen's going to talk to you about our appeals process.
All right, but listen, the lawyer.
The closing argument.
Yeah.
The prosecutor missed one very important phrase.
Yeah.
Right? I stand with Trump and the Constitution.
What?
And I will never back off that, ever.
Wait a minute. That's the important phrase that the prosecutor missed in his closing statement? That Steve Bannon stands with Trump and the Constitution? Well, standing with Trump will get you nothing. I was going to say that in $5 will get you a cup of coffee, but not even, because people know who you are, you piece of less than human excrement. And the Constitution, you don't stand with the Constitution. You are trying to upend the Constitution. All right. Well, let's hear what your little weasel of a lawyer has to say.
The misdemeanor from hell, Mr. Bannon.
The misdemeanor from hell.
I thought it was pretty good hell.
This is round one. That's what happened.
All right. This is the lawyer.
This is a bulletproof appeal.
You know what? Shut up. You know what? I'm gonna go through the lawyer because we don't need to hear what he says. He doesn't have a clue because he doesn't have a case. Let's see if Bannon shoots off his mouth at the end again. Of course he does.
Hang on. I want to thank the jury for the effort they did, the judge, particularly the court administration here, everybody. I only have one disappointment.
Yeah?
And that is the gutless members of that show trial committee, the J6 committee, didn't have the guts to come down here and testify in open court. Thank you very much.
Wait a minute. You're the one who didn't have the guts to testify in open court. There was no reason for any member of that committee to show up and testify. It wasn't about them. This was about you, Steve Bannon. And his feelings were hurt because nobody from the J6 committee showed up to testify. There was nothing for them to testify. He was subpoenaed and he ignored the subpoena. He made a decision not to comply with a legal subpoena from Congress. Guess what? There are consequences. I'm trying not to curse because, you know, that's my tendency, but I'm trying to be more family friendly for you. Okay. There are going to be times that it will just come out because I can't help myself. Like when I talk about Stephen fucking Bannon. Sorry. It had to be said. Ugh. Ugh. Yeah. You appeal. See where it gets you. The case was simple. He was subpoenaed twice, ignored subpoena for materials and for a deposition. He ignored both. He just chose not to comply. That's breaking the law. And I hope he rots in jail. Maybe he'll get Epstein'd. Then again, I don't think Epstein's dead. So, you know, maybe he won't get Epstein'd. All right. Now, whoever was calling is calling back. Hi, who's this?
This is Proudscale from Alabama.
Hey, Proudscale, what's on your mind today?
Well, a lot of people are probably thinking, what can I do? Well, you can support candidates who you believe in nationwide.
Yeah.
You can send them a few bucks and things like that. And if you're really not happy, like you are, with your local politicians and local party, there are ways you can help, like causes that matter to progressives, like transportation, the environment, and animals. I have been involved in trying to keep Amtrak here in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and I've networked and I've been successful in doing so. In fact, we are on the verge of making a big announcement concerning Amtrak in Tuscaloosa.
Wow,
soon.
Good for you.
So, you can do something. I mean, it's not like the Christo fascists are blocking you at every move. You can still do something. But we have to get out there and support these issues and support these candidates, or we're just going to lose our country. It's just simple.
It is. It's that simple. I mean, and again, I need to write the copy for this ad, and maybe I'll work with Boca on producing something. But it's going to be a generic, you know, why vote for the Democrat instead of the Republican? And it should be a no-brainer. You know, here's all the things that the Republicans have done in the last couple of months. Here's what the Democrats have been trying to do. And if not for the actions of two Democrats in the Senate and all the Republicans, we could have nice things. But they said no. So we need more Democrats to win Senate seats, so those two are irrelevant. But it's that important that people get out and vote. And vote against the Republican. You know, I have a difference with Howie Klein. Howie Klein lives in California, so he can choose to say, I'm not voting for the lesser of two evils anymore. And even if you don't consider whatever your Democrat, your representative evil, you know, chances are you're not thrilled with what they've been able to accomplish. Even though they've done a few good things, they were held up by some members ostensibly of our own party. My tagline is something like, Democrats, we're at least trying. Give us the power, give us the personnel, and we will get this stuff done. But you can't give us not a majority and expect us to get it done. I just have to edit it. You know.
I understand. good luck to you on your move. And thank you for the show. Oh. I really love it.
Well, thank you. And thank you for listening. I appreciate Proud Scale's one of the few who hang out in the chat room on the Listen Live page at NicoleSandler.com. We've got two chat rooms. There's the YouTube chat room that's always much busier and livelier. And then there's a handful of old timers who hang out at the, and Proud Skull's gone, who hang out in the chat room at NicoleSandler.com/listen-live. So there's two ways to interact. If you want the more low key, mellow group, there's, you know, a few people over there, and then, or you can come over to YouTube or not chat at all and just listen to the show. What a concept. All right. So I told you today I was going to save the day to do a recap of the series finale, not the series, I'm sorry, the season finale of the January 10th. Oh my God. It's a good thing it's Friday, of the January 6th committee hearings. So, you know, look, I'm not the only one who gets it wrong. Liz Cheney last night kept insisting that it was the 9th public hearing. It was the 8th. Last night was number 8. And it was the last one for now. They will come back again in, when? They'll come back again in September, because Congress is always gone in August. You know why? Well, especially in midterm years. Every other year, every member of the House is up. They run for real. Their term only lasts 2 years. So every member has to run for re-election every 2 years if they want to get re-elected, or, you know, new people come in. But so every 2 years, they just bank on, and that's the word I meant to use, August being spent in their district so they can campaign and raise money. Because, you know, that's what they need to do, is raise money. So they will take August off. But I think this committee is going to be working, because they said in September they will definitely come back and issue a preliminary report and then maybe even hold some more hearings. And they'll take them through January 6th, which is the day that the 118th Congress gets sworn in. So, and again, if the Republicans take control of the House, it's over. As of January 7th, the day that the 118th, I believe we're in the 117th now, the next Congress comes into being, this committee is dissolved, and then the Republicans take over. And remember the last time the Republicans held the House, they ran hearings Now, these hearings, I hope you agree with me, are worthwhile. They were necessary. Our country was under attack on January 6, 2021. A group of Donald Trump's supporters, egged on by him himself, attacked the Capitol, set up a gallows in the front of the building. They were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." You've seen enough video by now that it surely looked as if they were able to get him. They would have hung him. And we learned last night that even his Secret Service detail were so worried that many of them were calling home to say goodbye because they thought they might not make it out alive. That's how serious it was. So, anyway, that's where we are. So these hearings are important. The Republicans, on the other hand, held hearings on Benghazi for, I think, about 2 years. And again, it's a kind of thing out of sight, out of mind. I try not to think too much about it. But Hillary Clinton actually sat and testified before that committee for 11 hours. Now, what happened in Benghazi? There was an attack on the embassy. Well, it wasn't even the embassy. It was an outpost. And it was actually a CIA outpost. There were four Americans there. Were they protected enough? Probably not. But this does not rise to the level of what happened at the Capitol. This was an unfortunate international incident. And yes, there deserved to be an investigation of what happened. But 2 years of ridiculous nonstop hearings that went on ad nauseum, when every other word out of their mouths was Benghazi, to the point where I called it Benghazi Tourette's. Because that's what it was. Benghazi Tourette's. Benghazi. Just they'd be talking about anything else in office. Benghazi. That's what they do. They waste time on inconsequential things. So, at least I think the House Select Committee, Donald, it is a select committee, despite your childish nicknames, they've been doing really good work. And I appreciate the fact that most of the work was done in private so that they could then take all the information they had gleaned and package it up into 8 individual hearings and present us the pertinent information and the pertinent testimony. So we didn't have to sit through everybody on the committee with their 5 minutes of grandstanding. This was done right, and I appreciate it. And I hope if they come back for another round, they do it this way again. So let me share with you some of what went on. Now, last night, I got to say, they really oversold it. And I'd love to know if you agree or disagree with me. But I think that, again, every one of those, the 7 hearings leading up to last night, was groundbreaking, was jaw-dropping. New information came out that made you go, holy shit. Last night, I thought it was honestly the worst of the 8. Maybe it was me and I was just tired, but yeah. Maybe it was because we knew what was going on and they didn't really give us anything new. We didn't learn about the ketchup thrown against the wall. We didn't learn about Trump, you know, lurching at the Secret Service detail in the Suburban and, you know, trying to choke him because they wouldn't take him to the Capitol. We heard more about what we had already known. But that said, it was still pretty, you know, they tied it together and it doesn't look good for El Gordo, for the orange balloon there. So, but I do have some clips to play for you. So let me pull up my file from yesterday. I don't have as much as I thought I would, frankly, because, I didn't find it that compelling. But let's start with, let's see, 765. I don't even know what I did with my notes. I'm so bad. I'm so scattered. Is this them? No, that's not it either. I make these little notes and now I've lost. All right, we're going to just try it this way. So here, Liz Cheney, this is not on video, this is just audio. Liz Cheney basically said this is not the series finale, it's the season finale.
And now Even as we conduct our ninth hearing, we have considerably more to do. We have far more evidence to share with the American people and more to gather. So our committee will spend August pursuing emerging information on multiple fronts before convening further hearings this September, stretching from before Election Day through January 6th. At the close of today's hearing, our ninth, we will have addressed each element of that plan. But in the course of these hearings, we have received new evidence and new witnesses have bravely stepped forward. Efforts to litigate and overcome immunity and executive privilege claims have been successful, and those continue.
Okay, those continue. So there was Liz Cheney. I almost said Lynn. That's the mother who liked to write erotic lesbian fiction, just in case you were wondering. Look her up. Lynn Cheney, Dick's wife, wrote erotic lesbian fiction. Just saying. It's just a fun fact that could delight the crowds at your next cocktail party, just in case. See, I'm always looking out for you. All right, so Benny Thompson, the chair of the committee, wasn't there. He was there on video at the beginning and at the end because he has COVID. So Benny Thompson has COVID. Joe Biden has COVID. Let me just tell you something, and I've been telling you this all along. COVID is not over. In fact, this new Omicron variant, BA4 and BA5, they're saying are more contagious than any of the other strains so far. And it's not a day in the park either. It's not like the original Omicron that was much more milder. This one's nasty. So when you go out, wear a mask. And if you're not already vaccinated, what the fuck are you waiting for? And if you're not boosted, well, double what the fuck are you waiting for? And you should actually get the second booster, even though they're officially not giving it to anyone under 50. That's going to change soon. Maybe, because the House still has to fund the next round of vaccines, and they've cut off all COVID funding. Actually, I should say the Republicans have cut off all COVID funding. So anyway, I digress. Back to the hearing. So Liz Cheney last night really presided over the hearing. And last night, the questioning fell to the two members who hadn't done any questioning yet. Representative Luria from Virginia and Adam Kinzinger from Illinois. Okay, here's Adam Kinzinger.
Be clear by the end of this hearing. President Trump did not fail to act during the 187 minutes between leaving the ellipse and telling the mob to go home. He chose not to act.
Ooh.
But there were hundreds that day who honored their oaths and put their lives on the line to protect the people inside the Capitol and to safeguard our democracy. Many of them are here tonight with us, and many more are watching from home. As you already know, and we'll see again tonight, their service and sacrifice shines a bright light on President Trump's dishonor and dereliction of duty.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. All right, so they go through. There was a lot of I don't want to say regurgitation. I mean, stuff we knew. Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was asked, and this was on tape from, I guess, maybe it was a deposition. But you'll hear, and some of the audio quality was not very good, so I apologize for that. But here you can hear Mark Milley saying that Donald Trump never, ever called and said, we need help at the Capitol. It's under attack.
Vice President Pence, there were two or three calls with Vice President Pence. He was very animated, and he issued very explicit, very direct, unambiguous orders.
So that's Mark Milley again saying, Mike Pence called two or three times. Never heard from Donald Trump. And here is more, they went back to the videotape quite a bit last night for Pat Cipollone, the former White House counsel, Donald Trump's lawyer.
Did you ever hear the president ask for law enforcement response?
No.
Okay, there was like a pregnant pause there. The strangest thing, I should have pulled that video. I'm sorry, I don't have that video. But when he was in this deposition, this taped deposition, Cipollone had his attorney there. And it's like every question asked, the attorney would like look at him with this quizzical look. And sometimes Pat Cipollone would look at the attorney with this quizzical look. And there were these pregnant pauses. But, you know, it turns out he was, I guess you could say he was a hostile witness. I think he still works for Donald Trump. So he didn't really want to be there, but he had to be. And you're under oath. You have to answer truthfully. Here's Cipollone also talking about that how the people around Trump acted as the siege was underway. Did anybody try to get him to take action, to call off the goon squad? And here's how he answered.
Your advice was to tell people to leave the Capitol, and it took over 2 hours. When there were subsequent statements made, tweets put forth that, in your view, were insufficient. Did you continue, Mr. Cipollone?
Uh-oh. What happened to... hold on. Let's
Your advice was to tell people to leave the Capitol.
Sorry about that.
It took over 2 hours.
Right.
When there were subsequent statements made, tweets put forth that, in your view, were insufficient. Did you continue, Mr. Cipollone, throughout the period of time up until 4/17, continue, you and others, to push for a stronger statement?
Yes.
Yes.
Were you joined in that effort by Ivanka Trump?
Yes.
Eric Hershey?
Yes.
By Mark Meadows?
Yes.
Yes.
So there, he was joined in trying to tell Trump to do something by Ivanka Trump, Mark Meadows, Eric Hirschman, and who was the last one? Whoever it was. Oh, Mark Meadows, who should also be found guilty of contempt of Congress. But for some reason, they haven't charged him yet. And I only think that they haven't because there are bigger charges coming. Okay, so now we are going to go to some video. So if you're watching on one of the video streams, you'll see it. So one of the things, as I told you earlier, that we did find out, that we did learn last night, was kind of how freaked out Mike Pence's Secret Service detail was. So I've got two clips to play for you. The first one is, and the reason I'm showing the video here, is what the committee did is they mixed together audio from the Secret Service, from Mike Pence's Secret Service detail, trying to figure out how to get him out of the building, out of way of this mob of insurrectionists who were chanting "Hang Mike Pence" and had set up a gallows outside of the building to hang him. So to try to figure out how to get him out, interspersed with the video of what the insurrectionists were doing at that time. All right, so that's this clip. So here we go. What you'll hear was happening when what you'll see was taking place.
The building, hold.
Turn that door up.
If we're moving, we need to move now.
Copy.
If we lose any more time, we may lose the ability to leave. So if we're going to leave, we need to do it now.
Wow.
They've gained access to the second floor, and I've got public about 5 feet from me down here below.
Okay, copy. They are on the second floor, moving in now. We may want to consider getting out and leaving
now. Getting out now.
Copy.
Will we encounter the people once we make our way?
Repeat.
Counter any individuals if we made our way to the.
There's six officers between us and the people that are 5 to 10 feet away from me.
Wow.
Stand by. I'm going down to evaluate.
Go ahead.
We have a clear shot if we move quickly. We got smoke downstairs set by unknown smoke set downstairs by the protesters.
Is that route compromised?
We have this insecure. However, we will bypass some protesters that are being contained. There is smoke, unknown what kind of smoke it is. Copy.
Clear. We're coming out now. All right. Make a way.
Okay. And that's when the Secret Service brought Mike Pence and his family. He had family members there, too, out of the chambers where they were holed up to try to get them to a safe spot. Now, the other thing we learned dealing with these same people is that the Secret Service detail that they were using their radios and I'm guessing their phones to text to reach out to their families to say, goodbye because they thought they might not make it out alive. And you know, when you think about the Fox Not News cretins saying this was not no big deal, this was, you know, a nothing burger, or basically, listen to the words, listen to what you hear from in this piece here. All right, here we go. Oh,
are cognizant of the fear of retribution expressed by certain national security witnesses who have come forward to tell the truth. We've therefore taken steps to protect this national security individual's identity. Listen to this clip from their testimony.
What was the consistent message from the people about this idea of the president to walk to the Capitol?
To be completely honest, we were all in a state of shock.
Because why?
Because it's just, one, I think the actual physical feasibility of doing it, and then also we all knew what that indicated and what that meant, that this was no longer a rally, that this was going to move to something else if he physically walked to the Capitol. I don't know if you want to use the word insurrection, coup, whatever. We all knew that this would move from a normal, democratic, you know, public event into something else.
What was driving that sentiment, considering this part of it, the actual breach of the Capitol, hadn't happened yet?
Why were we alarmed?
Right.
The president wanted to lead tens of thousands of people to the Capitol. I think that was enough grounds for us to be alarmed.
That was enough grounds
even
for us to be alarmed?
Even though he understood many of his supporters were armed, the president was still adamant to go to the Capitol when he got off the stage at the Ellipse. But his Secret Service detail was equally determined to not let him go. That led to a heated argument with the detail that delayed the departure of the motorcade to the White House. We have evidence from multiple sources regarding an angry exchange in the presidential SUV, including testimony we will disclose today from two witnesses who confirmed that a confrontation occurred.
They confirmed it. Go figure. So, you know, the lie they want to put up, that the Secret Service people, Engel and O'Telly, I forget his name. It'll come back to me when I don't need to know it. They who are now, I think, under criminal investigation, by the way, said, oh, well, that's not true. Yes, it was true. It was true and it remains true. So we learned all that. Now, this next clip that I'm going to play for you was the one moment that I laughed out loud. We had heard that the committee was going to embarrass some of the Republican members who have been saying of late, oh, it's no big deal. It was just that, you know, it was a tourist thing at the Capitol. And I thought there would be a bunch of them. It turns out that I believe the only person that they really turned the spotlight on was Josh Hawley. And of course, he deserved it. But yeah, this one, I hope you got to see it. But in case you didn't, I will certainly post the video on the blog today. All right. So here's the clip. They start with Cassidy Hutchinson, her testimony from a couple of weeks ago.
Staffer that worked to always represent the administration to the best of my ability and to showcase the good things that he had done for the country.
Yeah.
I remember feeling frustrated, disappointed.
He didn't do anything good for the country, by the
really,
way.
Really, it felt personal. It was really sad. As an American, I was disgusted. It was unpatriotic. It was un-American. We were watching the Capitol building get defaced over a lie.
Yeah.
As you will see, at 2:26, the vice president had to be evacuated to safety a second time.
Ooh.
And came within 40 feet of the rioters.
Whoa.
The attack escalated quickly right after the tweet.
Okay, now you see them being evacuated. Pence and his family being evacuated, where we left off in the last video. Oy, this is stomach churning. Whoa. Whoa, they were 40 feet away from Pence.
During this chaos, what did President Trump do at that point? He went back to calling senators to try to further delay the electoral count.
Of course he did.
While the vice president was being evacuated from the Senate, President Trump called Senator Tommy Tuberville, one of his strongest supporters in the Senate. As Senator Tuberville later recalled, he had to end the call so that he could evacuate the Senate chamber himself.
Okay.
Let's listen.
Yeah, let's.
He called, didn't call my phone, called somebody else, and they
called Mike Lee's phone.
I basically told him, I said, Mr. President, we're not doing much work here right now because they just took our vice president out. And matter of fact, I'm going to have to hang up on you. I've got to leave.
Got to go.
Senator Josh Hawley also had to flee.
Uh-oh.
Earlier that afternoon, before the joint session started, he walked across the east front of the Capitol.
Oh, there's
a
picture of him raising his fist.
He raised his fist in solidarity with the protesters already amassing at the security gates. We spoke with a Capitol police officer who was out there at the time. She told us that Senator Hawley's gesture riled up the crowd, and it bothered her greatly because he was doing it in a safe space, protected by the officers and the barriers.
Of course.
Later that day, Senator Hawley fled after those protesters he helped to rile up stormed the Capitol.
He fled?
See for yourself.
He fled? Here he goes. There, watch. Oh, there he goes. And now they have it in slow motion. Now you can decide, and you still see him running. Now, some people have put this to music, to the Chariots of Fire.
Think about what we've seen. Undeniable violence at the Capitol.
We'll get back to that thought in a second.
The vice president being evacuated to safety by the Secret Service. Senators running through the hallways of the Senate to get away from the mob. As the commander-in-chief, President Trump was oath and duty-bound to protect the Capitol. His senior staff understood that.
Yes, they did.
Do you believe, Jared, that the president has an obligation to ensure a peaceful transfer of power?
Yes.
Ooh.
And do you think the president has an obligation to defend all three branches of our government?
His answer, of course, I think, was yes. The video cuts off there. But, all right, let me just tell you, today, in one of the Axios or Politico or one of those, they did a sort of a deep dive on what Trump 2024 would look like. And we learned that Jared and Ivanka are now purged from Donald's inner political circle. Instead of Jared and Ivanka, he's talking to the MyPillow guy. Thought you'd want to know. All right, so you know what they didn't show, which is really weird. When they played the video of Josh Hawley running, by the way, this is the soundtrack that you didn't hear.
Run away!
Yeah, run away. That's Josh Hawley now. But what you didn't hear, they played it, but they must have cut out the audio in the hearing room when they played it. So let me play for you what happened in the hearing room when they showed the video of Josh Hawley running away. Listen carefully, because remember, the room is filled with witnesses. Well, not witnesses, but, you know, like the Capitol Police who had already testified. They were there. Some members of Congress were there. A lot of media was there. So what happened in the room when they played the video of Josh Hawley running away? Here we go. There's the video. Yes. That is laughter. They're laughing at Josh Hawley, as they should, because what else do you do with Josh Hawley, right? So There was a lot made of, you know, Donald Trump, and we already heard the testimony that Ivanka and Mark Meadows and everybody and his brother was telling Trump, do something. And he sat there in his little dining room off the Oval Office for 2 hours watching gleefully, apparently, the violence unfold on television. And, you know, they implored him to say something. Well, remember, he finally recorded that video out in the Rose Garden, right? It was already like 4 o'clock or after 4 o'clock, after much of the damage had been done and after much of the Capitol had been cleared. And that's when they finally were able to talk him into going out and recording that horrible video. Remember the video when he said, go home, we love you. Yeah, that weirdness. Well, here's the segment in which they talked about that. Hold on, like this.
We obtained the never-before-seen raw footage of the president recording his address to the nation that day on January 7th. More than 24 hours after the last time he had addressed the nation from the Rose Garden. Let's take a look.
Oh, I gotcha. I'm screwed up here. Sorry.
Whenever you're ready, sir.
Oh, this was in the White House the next day.
I would like to begin by addressing the heinous attack yesterday, and to those who broke the law, you will pay. You do not represent our movement. You do not represent our country. And if you broke the law, you can't say that. I already said you will pay. The demonstrators who infiltrated the Capitol have defied the seat of dust. It's defiled, right? See, I can't see it very well.
Yeah, well, okay, maybe
I'll
wear glasses.
I'm going to do this. Let's go. But this election is now over. Congress has certified the results. I don't want to say the election's over. I just want to say Congress has certified the results without saying the election's
over. Of course, okay? You don't want to say that. Okay?
But Congress has certified. Now Congress has
certified.
Yeah, right. Now Congress
has didn't say over. So let me see. Go to the paragraph before. Okay?
Okay. Get mad, Donald. Come on, get angry.
I would like to begin by addressing the heinous attack yesterday. Yesterday is a hard
word.
Can't
say yesterday.
Me.
It's a hard word.
Just take it out. The heinous attack.
Ah, good. Take the word yesterday because it doesn't work with it. The heinous attack on our country. Say on our country.
No.
Want to say that?
No.
My only goal was to ensure the integrity of the vote. My only goal was to ensure the integrity of the vote.
And he hit the table. Yeah, apparently it took him over an hour to record this video. I guess I don't have the video of the Rose Garden thing, but that's okay. That's when he said, go home, we love you. No, we don't. They tried to, they did a siege on the Capitol. We don't love them. By the way, I do have this. I don't know where it fits in the grand scheme of things, but we have a bunch of, this was another exhibit from the committee with when members, Republican members from Mark Meadows to Lindsey Graham to Mitch McConnell, all, you know, place the blame squarely on Donald Trump's fat ass. But then they backtracked after Mark Meadows went down to Mar-a-Lago and sucked the mushroom dick or something. I don't know. And that's when it started changing. But, you know, there's this thing called tape, audio tape, videotape. There are recordings made. And sometimes what you say lives on forever.
Well, let me be very clear to all of you. And I've been very clear to the president. He bears responsibilities for his words and actions.
You think?
No ifs, ands, or buts. I asked him personally today, does he hold responsibility for what happened? Does he feel bad about what happened? He told me he does have some responsibility for what happened. And he needs to acknowledge that.
Oops.
President Trump has never publicly acknowledged his responsibility for the attack.
Never.
The only time he apparently did so was in that private call with Kevin McCarthy. There's something else President Trump has never acknowledged. The names and the memories of the officers who died following the attack on the Capitol. We're honored to be joined tonight by police and first responders who bravely protected us on January 6th. Your character and courage give us hope that democracy can and should prevail, even in the face of a violent insurrection. We on this dais can never thank you enough for what you did to protect our democracy. On January 9th, two of President Trump's top campaign officials texted each other about the president's glaring silence on the tragic death of Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who succumbed to his injuries the night of January 7th. These campaign officials were Tim Murtaugh, Trump's director of communications, and one of his deputies, Matthew Walking. Their job was to convince people to vote for President Trump. So they knew his heart, his mind, and his voice as well as anyone. And they knew how he connects with his supporters. Here's what they had to say about their boss. Murtaugh said, "Also shitty not to have acknowledged the death of the Capitol police officer."
Yeah.
Walking responded, "That's enraging to me. Everything he said about supporting law enforcement was a lie." To which Murtaugh replied, "You know what this is, of course? If he acknowledged the dead cop, he'd be implicitly faulting the mob. And he won't do that because they're his people. And he would also be close to acknowledging that what he lit at the rally got out of control. No way he acknowledges something that could ultimately be called his fault. No way. President Trump did not then and does not now have the character or courage to say to the American people what his own people know to be true. He is responsible for the attack on the Capitol on January 6th.
Yep. And while, for those of you who are listening to an audio stream and not seeing the video, they kept cutting to the gallery, people watching, with some of the officers who were injured in that attack on the Capitol. And the widow of Brian Sicknick, or his girlfriend, sitting there listening to this. By the way, this was not part of the hearing, but this came out today. Officer Fanone, remember him? He was the one who was beaten pretty badly, like really severely. His traumatic brain injury and more from this from the attack. He had a few things to say about Josh Hawley. Let's hear it.
Well, I mean, to be completely honest, to give you my, like, the first thoughts that popped into my mind was Josh Hawley is a
is a what?
And he ran like
use your imagination.
And the fist pump combined with what he did in the immediate aftermath just shows the true character, or lack thereof.
There were reports that saying, like, when they showed the video inside the hearing, people started kind of giggling, laughing.
Oh yeah, there was an eruption of laughter. I mean, I obviously I see like the amusement of it, and I'm not going to fault people for finding it humorous, but that pisses me off. That guy's a clown. And you see the way that these guys perform in public, and then what they are in reality. You get a lot of that nonsense up here on Capitol Hill with these members of Congress that have become like a caricature in the media. But in reality, they have no character.
Okay, so there's Michael Fanone. I mean, we've heard it. He goes off on Josh Hawley, and it was warranted. So I wanted to share that with you. There's one more clip I want to play from the hearing itself. And as Liz Cheney was wrapping it up for the season, not for the series, she had a few words to say about what we learned from Steve Bannon. Now, Steve Bannon today was convicted on two counts of contempt of Congress for non-compliance with congressional subpoenas. But what Liz Cheney is going to show you here in just a moment is what he did on his podcast before, this was the before January 6th. I don't know if it was the day before or the week before. I don't recall. Maybe we'll find out in the clip. But Steve Bannon basically blew Donald Trump's whole lie, the big lie, because he laid out in advance what they were going to do if and when they lost. And this is all you need to hear, really, if you have any wonder about, you know, if Donald Trump knew what was going on, if this was all pre-planned. Steve Bannon runs off at the mouth.
At one point in 2016, when he was first running for office, Donald Trump said this: "I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and I wouldn't lose any voters." That quote came to mind last week when audio from Trump advisor Steve Bannon surfaced from October 31st, 2020, just a few days before the presidential election. Let's listen.
"And what Trump's going to do is just declare victory, right? He's going to declare victory. But that doesn't mean he's the winner. He's just going to say he's the winner. The Democrats, more of our people vote early that count. Theirs voted mail. And so they're going to have a natural disadvantage, and Trump's going to take advantage of it. That's our strategy. He's going to declare himself a winner. So when you wake up Wednesday morning, it's going to be a firestorm. If Trump is losing by 10 or 11 o'clock at night, it's going to be even crazier. No, because he's going to sit right there and say they stole it. If Biden's winning, Trump is going to do some crazy shit."
And of course, 4 days later, President Trump declared victory when his own campaign advisors told him he had absolutely no basis to do so. What the new Steve Bannon audio demonstrates is that Donald Trump's plan to falsely claim victory in 2020, no matter what the facts actually were, was premeditated. Perhaps worse, Donald Trump believed he could convince his voters to buy it, whether he had any actual evidence of fraud or not.
Whether he had any actual evidence of fraud or not. And of course, we know not. So if you're like me, you've been frustrated over the apparent lack of anything from the Justice Department, right? I've been screaming, where the hell is Merrick Garland? Well, if you listen to the show regularly, you've heard Marcy Wheeler on here a number of times say, give him time. He's doing an investigation. This is what they do. Well, Merrick Garland was asked about that just yesterday.
A January 6th question. You have said time and time again that your approach is to move from the bottom up and to go where the evidence leads you. Recently, people have posited alternative ways of going about this. One of them is called the hub and spoke notion, of sort of targeting the group of people around President Trump and then considering the rioters as one spoke, and also looking at the electors' scheme as another spoke. Can you just explain to us if there was a decision point early on in which you decided to go the way that you did, why you rejected these other potential paths? And as a follow-up, have you seen anything either coming out of Fulton County in Georgia or anything out of the January 6th committee that has moved the investigation in a new direction?
So there are a number of assumptions based into this leading question.
Okay.
I'm very familiar with as a former trial lawyer. But there is a lot of speculation about what the Justice Department is doing, what it's not doing, what our theories are, what our theories aren't. And there will continue to be that speculation. That's because a central tenet of the way in which the Justice Department investigates, and a central tenet of the rule of law, is that we do not do our investigations in public.
Ah.
This is the most wide-ranging investigation and the most important investigation that the Justice Department has ever entered into.
Ooh.
And we have done so because this effort to upend a legitimate election, transferring power from one administration to another, cuts at the fundamental of American democracy. We have to get this right. And for people who are concerned, as I think every American should be, about protecting democracy, We have to do two things. We have to hold accountable every person who is criminally responsible for trying to overturn a legitimate election, and we must do it in a way filled with integrity and professionalism, the way the Justice Department conducts investigations. Both of these are necessary in order to achieve justice and to protect our democracy.
Just one follow-up. Do you think you have enough resources to do that? We know that the budget request that was made earlier this year was not complied with. Do you feel that you need additional resources?
The Justice Department would always like additional resources and would be happy to take them, but we are going to accomplish our mission here. The people in the Justice Department are committed to this. They are working 24/7 on this.
We are going to accomplish our mission here, is what he said. And he also repeated himself, no one is above the law. Okay. Hey, Merrick, we're going to hold you to it. All right. So that's our coverage of season one of the hearings. Now, we've only got about 2 minutes left, and I got to share this clip with you because it's just so perfect. So remember, I don't know, some months ago, we were all watching the movie Don't Look Up, and some people thought, oh, it's a little too far-fetched. You know, remember the premise. The Earth is being destroyed. There was this giant meteor heading right for us. It was going to kill us, and it was a metaphor, of course, for our climate issues. Well, I'm going to play for you two clips. The first clip is a scene from Don't Look Up, which you should remember, that people thought was too outrageous. It was just too, this would not happen, too outlandish. And then the other clip is, something that actually just happened on a so-called news program. All right, so here it goes. Here's the clip from Don't Look Up.
Are we not being clear? We're trying to tell you that the entire planet is about to be destroyed.
Okay.
Well, it's, just something we do around here. You know, we just keep the bad news light.
Well, you see, John, you're outside enjoying the sunshine. It's not too hot, is it?
No, it's absolutely lovely. It's, what, 20 degrees out here. It's perfect. But on a serious note, folks, by early next week, you can scrap 20 degrees. It could well be 40 degrees. I think there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of excess deaths early next week.
John.
The charts that I can see in front of me are frightening. So we all like nice weather, but this will not be nice weather. This will be potentially lethal weather for a couple of days. It'll be brief, but it'll be brutal.
Oh,
so,
John,
you know, but we can
John, I want us to be happy about the weather.
Oh, no.
And every single, I don't know whether something's happened to meteorologists to make you all a little bit fatalistic and harbingers of doom. Because all of the broadcasts, particularly on the BBC, every time I've turned on anyone's talking about the weather, they're saying that there's going to be tons of fatalities. But haven't
yes.
we always had hot weather?
Oh, my God.
John, I mean, wasn't the 76, the summer of 76, that was as hot as this, wasn't it?
No, and, you know, we are seeing more and more records, more and more frequently and more severely. Some people always hark back to the summer of 76, which was a freak event 40 years ago. But heat waves are becoming more extreme. This is yet another one which is coming down the track towards us. And, you know, I don't think we should be too...
they cut off the tape, but you got the idea. Oh, my God! In Great Britain, that was an actual televised segment on the news. Oh, John, don't say that. We've got to be happy. Can't you just enjoy the weather? No, it's fucking hot out there. Oh my God. Well, stay safe and stay cool this weekend because the heat is horrible. Yes, a runway melted in England and this moron news spokesmodel saying, oh, John, don't be so fatalistic. It's a lovely sunny day outside. Please. All right. Wow. On that note, I still have all the stuff I didn't get to today. Well, that's good because we have next week. So we'll do it next week. Thank you for listening, everyone. By the way, if Bruce Springsteen tickets are going on sale near you, it's not Bruce's fault. It's Ticketmaster, and they're really screwing with us. And I guess I will never see Bruce Springsteen again. So with that, have a great weekend, everyone. I will see you Monday. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. And I'll leave you with the news. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
So did you tune in Thursday night for the season one finale of the January 6th hearings in the House? Well, overnight rating numbers aren't available yet at press time, but the hearings aired live in prime time on NBC, ABC, CBS, MSNBC, CNN, a number of other places, most notably not on the Fox Not News channel. Although many Fox over-the-air television affiliates did carry the proceedings live, such was the case in New York City. Anyway, that marks the end of the first round of hearings. Liz Cheney, sitting in the chair's seat because Chairman Benny Thompson is out with COVID, opened the hearing by saying there are still more to come.
Our committee will spend August pursuing emerging information on multiple fronts before convening further hearings this September, stretching from before Election Day through January 6th. In the course of these hearings, we have received new evidence and new witnesses have bravely stepped forward. Efforts to litigate.
Well, on Thursday night, witnesses with firsthand knowledge of what was happening inside the White House on January 6th told the committee that Donald Trump did not place a single call to law enforcement or national security officials as the insurrection was happening. And he didn't issue a statement urging rioters to leave the Capitol and go home until they had already started to do so. The committee used that testimony to make a case that Donald Trump's refusal to intervene amounted to a dereliction of duty. The hearing also featured lots of disturbing new audio and video showing how precarious Mike Pence's situation was.
We have a clear shot if we move quickly. We got smoke downstairs, set by unknown smoke set downstairs. However, we will bypass some protesters that are being contained. There is smoke, unknown what kind of smoke it is. Copy.
Clear, we're coming out now. All right, make a way.
And they were fearing for their own lives.
A lot of very personal calls over the radio. There were calls to say goodbye to family members, so on and so forth. It was getting, for whatever the reason was on the ground, the VP detail thought that this was about to get very ugly.
We also saw outtakes from the former guy himself as his staff tried to encourage him to record a video, both the one that he finally did from the Rose Garden as Capitol Police were getting control of the situation, and the one he recorded the following day when he still would not say that the election was over. A bit of comic relief, at least laughter from the peanut gallery, as the committee showed never-before-seen surveillance footage of Senator Josh Hawley running away. This, of course, was a big contrast to that infamous photo of him holding up a fist in solidarity with the rioters. And we saw footage of former White House counsel Pat Cipollone testifying that he, Ivanka Trump, Eric Hirschman, and Mark Meadows all pushed the then president to tell insurrectionists to leave the Capitol on January 6th, but he refused.
Your advice was tell people to leave the Capitol, and it took over 2 hours. When there were subsequent statements made, tweets put forth, that in your view were insufficient. Did you continue, Cipollone, throughout the period of time up until 4/17, continue, you and others, to push for a stronger statement?
Yes.
Were you joined in that effort by Ivanka Trump?
Yes.
By Eric Hirschman?
Yes.
By Mark Meadows?
Yes.
In related news, the Department of Homeland Security's Inspector General has told the Secret Service to stop looking into its erased text messages related to the January 6th attack on the Capitol because the Inspector General's office has launched its own ongoing criminal investigation into the matter. In other news, President Joe Biden on Thursday said he's tested positive for COVID-19, but will continue to work while in isolation at the White House, despite mild symptoms. He did post a video to Twitter telling Americans that he's doing well and that it's all going to be okay. He added that he's been double vaccinated and double boosted. We've also learned that the 79-year-old president is taking the antiviral drug Paxlovid, so his prognosis is okay. The House, controlled by the Democrats, on Thursday passed a bill that would protect access to birth control. Can you believe this is necessary in 2022? Well, it's aiming to shield our rights from any future Supreme Court decision like Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, which struck down our right to an abortion. All Democrats and 8 Republicans voted for the bill. So the final vote tally was 228 to 195. That means 195 Republicans out of 203 of them voted against your right to birth control. This just shows that there's not a single woman or man, for that matter, who should vote for a Republican in a congressional race come November. I apologize in advance for what I'm about to say. Hot enough out there for you? The deadly heat wave across the globe has done strange things to infrastructure, as in an airport just on the outskirts of London, where the runway melted after temperatures there reached its hottest day on record when the thermometer hit 104 degrees Fahrenheit. Officials in London are also wrapping the Hammersmith Bridge in foil because they say the foil will reflect sunlight and keep the bridge from overheating. Wow. The heat wave is also currently affecting more than 900 million people in China, or 64% of the population. In the city of Chongqing, the heat caused a museum roof to melt. And here in the U.S., triple-digit temperatures are causing several power grids to buckle. Stay safe. All eyes are on Stephen Bannon's contempt trial as closing arguments begin Friday morning. Bannon was accused of refusing to provide documents or testimony in response to the January 6th committee's subpoena. Originally, he had suggested that Donald Trump had invoked executive privilege on his behalf, which the former guy's lawyers denied. During the trial, although Bannon promised big things, he didn't even testify or call a single witness in his defense. Just saying. And in case you're wondering if there are any consequences to the new wave of anti-vaxxers in the wake of the COVID-19 vaccine disinformation campaign by Trumpers and other Republicans, the answer is a resounding yes. The first case of polio in the United States in about a decade has been detected in Rockland County, New York. The patient is an unvaccinated adult man. Go figure. The state's Department of Health confirmed that the infection was transmitted from someone who received the oral polio vaccine, which is still not available in the U.S., but is in other countries. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
About truth, I'm all about facts. I'm all about educating our listener, educating our viewer, educating the American people and the American worker, the voter, because